I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. Dictionary.com defines black humor as humor that regards human suffering as absurd rather than pitiable. As the partial government shutdown continues to wreak havoc in the lives of federal workers and many of the people they serve, today on Midday, we're exploring black humor in a more literal sense. In her latest book, Dr. Janet Dates traces the history of African-American comedy and its impact on American culture, from griots in Africa to the superstar comedians of the present day. She joins me to talk about From Blackface to Black Twitter, reflections on black humor, race, politics, and gender. Plus, theater critic Jaywin Russick reviews the Rapid Lemon production of Thank You, Dad at Baltimore's Theater Project. Midday starts right after the news. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Today we're going to talk about the history of humor in the African-American community. My guest is Janet Dates, a former dean of the Howard University School of Communications, with her colleague, Dr. Mia Moody Ramirez. Dr. Dates has written a book that traces the evolution of black humor from African storytellers to modern-day icons of popular culture. They explore how black comics have used their platform and their performances to not only make audiences laugh, but to educate people as to the joys and challenges of the African-American experience. The book is called From Blackface to Black Twitter, Reflections on Black Humor, Race, Politics, and Gender. Janet Dates joins me here in Studio A. Janet, it's nice to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
And listeners, if you'd like to join in and chime in on perhaps some of your favorite black comedians, we'd love to hear from you. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR, and we are streaming on the WYPR Facebook page, thanks to our digital producer, Jamila Krimple. So this book is interestingly timely, given that NBC has just had this big problem with one of their, you know, vaunted superstars, Megyn Kelly.
Yeah.
Remind us what happened with Miss Kelly, who's no longer under the employ of NBC News.
Yeah. Well, she got into a conversation about how she thought people should be able to use blackface, whether they were African Americans or whatever, and have that as part of their costumes for Halloween, I think it was. And she said that's what she did when she was a youngster, and there was nothing wrong with it. And it meant that people in the black community recognized that no one of authority and power and influence on her staff was African American, because they would have told her, don't do that. Don't say that. Don't go there. And no one could do that because they didn't have the power to make her understand that.
And she walked away from NBC News. I mean, she was fired, basically, or bought out of her contract. So she did walk away with
$30 million.
Yeah, so, you know, we're not going to cry too many tears for her. But you start this book back with a discussion of the African griots back in the homeland, bringing their skills, their storytelling ability to the U.S. when they were enslaved along with everybody else in their village. So that's an interesting lineage between somebody like, you know, Dave Chappelle or Kevin Hart and the African griots of the 17th, 18th centuries.
Well, the thing that's that ties them together is the fact that they have African-American heritage, you know. The people who came originally from Africa got here to these shores and became part of the New World. And, of course, over time, African-American, when it became a country. And so that same lineage continues on. The other thing that happens for our country is that back during the slavery period, you had white men who corked up, as they called it. They would burn cork and then blacken their faces and pretend to be African Americans and set out images and narratives of the African American as idiotic, as silly, as unlettered, unable to understand democracy, unable to understand the world. And that was how they conveyed the idea of who the black person was in this country and where they should fit in the hierarchy of things.
And this is the minstrelsy scene that happened, and it lasted quite a long time.
Quite a while, didn't it?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it was back in at the turn of the 20th century that Al Jolson was in a film.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing is that the ideas that were conveyed through the minstrel era was continued in every media system after that. When we're talking about radio, television, film, even theater. And then, of course, when you come to today, when we're talking about social media, some of those same threads are there. And it takes an understanding of your history to not continue those threads yourself or to wrestle with them in such a way that you reveal, as Dave Chappelle did, what was going on and how people were really being informed and controlled by some of those images. And so I think that's some of what was going on. One of the things that we have argued is that subconsciously or consciously, the African-American comedians, for the most part, were trying to help the larger society as well as the Black community accept differences among Black comedians. So some of them ignored race, you know, Bill Cosby, Kevin Hart, ignored
Sinbad,
race.
You've named a
right,
few. Yeah,
right. Uh-huh. So they ignored race, and they just said, we're all human beings, and we're funny, and we have these things that are going on in our families and our lives. And so that was their approach, and very successfully. And then you had others who grabbed race by the horns and were ready to shove it down throats of everybody who was listening. And so that was Chris Rock, for example, Dave Chappelle, Richard Pryor. Chris Rock, I want to tell you an interesting thing about Chris Rock, because he did some things that nobody else, as far as I know, has tried to do. He wanted to make sure that there were more African Americans in the lineage of the producers and the writers from the television and films, television shows and films that that featured particularly African Americans, but in general. And so he decided that he was going to replicate the Harvard Lampoon. And when I was dean at Howard School of Communication,
as a black publication, yeah,
right. Mm-hmm. So when I was dean at the School of Communications, he wrote in the New York Times that he was going to start a humor magazine at Howard University, and I remember the president, Swigert, called me up and he said, "Do you know anything about this?" And I was like, "No." And he said, "Well."
So this was announced before he cleared it with anybody at Howard, huh?
But then he, but I said,
"Of course,
you know,
who would turn that deal
that's
down?"
That's right. Yeah. I said, "We would welcome him. We will find a way." And of course, a lot of students came. We had a huge audience the day that he came. And he came with Wanda Sykes and Bill Stephanie and a lot of good, really good people who were smart and who were in positions of real moving toward power and influence. But at the time, they were not, and he was helping them to get their foot in the door. Anyway, they came and helped our students. And so we had our version of the Harvard Lampoon, which was the Ill Top Journal, which was a play on the newspaper that came out weekly at the time. I think it came out daily by the time they stopped. There are different ways that it's being done now, not the social media as well as hard
right.
copies. He played on that, and it worked out very, very well. Some young people.
And it lasted for a while, too, didn't it?
It was about 3 years.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
And I think part of the reason it didn't last as long as it might have is because parents didn't send their students to Howard to become humorists. They sent them there to become doctors and lawyers, and,
right.
you know.
Yeah.
So.
And you make the point in the book, you know, when we talk about these racial stereotypes that were established, you know, Jim Crow era as well as through the minstrelsy era and then, you know, through vaudeville and radio and television and theater and movies and stuff to the present day, mm-hmm. you make the point that it's not just white people buying into these
yeah.
false narratives. There's a lot of black people buying into them
right.
as well. I mean,
right.
this is pervasive in the culture. You almost can't avoid it.
Well, it's like you're swimming in the ocean and you don't recognize that you're in the water. I mean, it's just part of what our culture has been like. And so I think some people are smart enough to figure out ways to address it and tackle it. And some of them are the humorists, you know. And they do it in different ways. So I think what we have to do is sort of pick it apart and recognize, oh, this is how they're helping us to recognize what's going on here, you know.
Jan Dates is my guest. The book is a terrific book called From Blackface to Black Twitter, Reflections on Black Humor, Race, Politics, and Gender. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Let's listen to a clip from two comedians who are huge favorites of mine, Key and Peele. Who had a show on Comedy Central for several years. It was my opinion, my humble, uninformed opinion. It's the best thing that's ever been on television. I just thought, this is a skit that they do with a substitute teacher.
All right, listen up, y'all. I'm y'all substitute teacher, Mr. Garvey. I taught school for 20 years in the inner city, so don't even think about messing with me. Y'all feel me? Mm-hmm. Okay, let's take a roll here. Balake. Where is Balake at? There's no Balake here today. Yes, sir.
My name is Blake.
Are you out of your god mind?
Blake?
What? Do you want to go to war, Balake?
No.
Because we could go to war.
No.
I'm for real. I'm for real. So you better check yourself. D-Nice. Is there a D-Nice? If one of y'all says some silly name, this whole class is gonna feel my wrath. Now, D-Nice.
Do you mean Denise?
Son of a You say your name right now.
Denise?
Say it right.
Denise.
Correctly.
Denise.
Right.
Denise.
Right.
D-Nice.
That's better. Thank you. Now, Aaron, where are you? Where is Aaron right now?
So here's a black teacher in a white suburban high school pronouncing names and making fun of the black community, not the white community.
Exactly. And doing it in a way that is stereotypical, and yet it's funny. And people laugh at it, black and white. I think that we have to be non-judgmental about it when we're analyzing it as educators and as communications, you know, people who are studying communications, and try to see beyond the surface. You have to question why it was funny. And when you delve into that, it hits a funny bone of people from all communities, because these are skilled communicators who figured out what triggers you to laugh, whether it is stereotypical or not.
Yeah, and it is funny on a basic level, and it's also it seems to me a good thing when all of us can make fun of ourselves. You know, I mean, if we can't make fun of ourselves, we shouldn't be making fun of other people. You know, but it and these guys are so brilliant. I mean, one of their great things was the anger management alter ego of President Obama. They actually even performed that with the president at the Correspondents' Dinner one time.
Right.
I mean, I just think they're just brilliant folks. We have a call from Charlotte on the line from Baltimore. Charlotte, welcome to Midday with Jan Dates. Thanks for calling.
Hi, yes, thank you for taking my call, and welcome to your guest. I love that Key and Peele piece. Reminded me of Michelle, and that's why I called. It's spelled M-E-S-H-E-L-L-E. She is a local comedian
Yes.
who is really, really good. You probably know her, Tom. And she's on tour right now. I urge people to watch for her. Her current tour is Funny as a Mother, ..
Yeah.
So that's it, Michelle.
Yeah, no, she is terrific, and she is one of Baltimore's best, to be sure. Jan Dates, you do talk about women in comedy a lot in this book. I mean, there are, you know, from Moms Mabley, you know, back in the day, up through Monique and Issa Rae, who's got this, you know, bunch of projects going on, HBO and elsewhere. So there is a bigger and bigger piece of the pie being carved out by women comedians these days.
Right. Tiffany Haddish, who's really taken off.
She's brilliant.
She really is, and she also is so honest with, more recently she bombed when she was on stage and just really lost the audience in terms of her humor. And then she just admitted it. She said, you know what, I'm doing a terrible job tonight. I don't know why. And to me, part of the appeal of these humors is their honesty. And they were being honest about audiences and about people in general, and they're also honest about themselves. And to me, that was what was conveyed in that particular instance, and you know, this as well, of course.
Yeah, well, I mean, communications is in a lot of ways about authenticity.
Yes.
If people don't think you're really sincere and you're not credible, you got problems.
Yes.
Let's face it. All right, we're going to take a little break. Otherwise, I'll have another kind of problem. So we'll be right back with Dr. Jeanette Dates. The new book is called From Blackface to Black Twitter, Reflections on Black Humor, Race, Politics, and Gender. You can join us at 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayWIPR. And we are also streaming on the WIPR Facebook page. I'm Tom Hall. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow, it's the Midday News Wrap. Paula Reed of CBS News joins me to talk about William Barr's confirmation hearings to be the next attorney general. Barr assured the Senate that Robert Mueller would be allowed to finish his investigation, but questions remain as to whether or not Mueller's findings would be made public. So what does this mean as the Democratic Congress begins using its power to look into all things Trump? We'll talk about that tomorrow with Paula Reed from CBS. Plus, the internationally acclaimed classical violinist Jennifer Coe will perform for us live. She is a great, great violinist. That's all coming up tomorrow on Midday. And on the way a little later today, J. Wynn Russick has her weekly theater review. We'll talk about a new show at Baltimore's Theater Project called Thank You, Dad. If you've just joined us, we're talking about the history of humor in the African-American community with Dr. Jan Dates. She's the co-author of a new book called From Blackface to Black Twitter, Reflections on Black Humor, Race, Politics, and Gender. You can join our conversation at 410-662-8780, our email midday@wipr.org, to send us a tweet @MiddayWIPR, to join me on Twitter, it's @TomHallWIPR, and we are streaming on the WIPR Facebook page. Jan Dates, we got a couple of calls. Let's go to George in Baltimore. George, thanks for calling.
Hey, great. Welcome to you and your guests. Anyway, my first question and a comment. Question: when your guest talked about African-American comedians educating their audiences, she was spot on. And I really appreciate her making that comment. It was so important. And I applaud you, Tom, for what you said in describing people who were bought here as slaves. You referred to them as being enslaved. And there's a big difference when you refer to people who are enslaved. That means something was done to them.
That's right.
Oh,
something
absolutely.
Happened to them.
Absolutely.
So I really, really appreciate that. Now, I'll close with this. I really wish your guest could expound just a little bit on an exceptional comedian of his time in our lives, and that is Dick Gregory.
Mm. Yes.
Yeah, one of the greats. Well,
he
thank
was.
You. Thank you for that call, George. I appreciate it. Now, Dick Gregory, one of the comedians who used politics and his platform as a public figure to move the needle, not just in comedy, but in the social realm.
Yeah. Social and political realm. And I think he, as I recall, partnered with Kathy Hughes quite a bit. Am I right?
Who is the owner of
Radio One, TV
Radio
One,
yeah,
Social Media One, everything,
a big
one.
Black media company, yeah,
right,
yeah.
No, I mean, I think he was absolutely adamant about making sure that with his platform, he got some ideas out that he thought were important to trying to move the needle, as you say, and as we've said in the book. Comedians really were trying to do that either consciously or subconsciously, and I think they succeeded in different ways at different points in time in their careers, and they set different goals for themselves over those time periods. But I think Dick Gregory started out in one direction, helping to move that needle, and then moved in some other directions that he thought were more effective.
Yeah, of course, Dick Gregory, you know, active during the time of the civil rights movement in the 60s. One of the comedians you write a lot about is Trevor Noah, the host of The Daily Show. Here's a clip, and he, of course, he's been very successful as a political comedian.
Oh, yeah.
So with the 100-day mark approaching and not much to show for it, there was only one thing for Donald Trump to do. Admit that being president is a lot more nuanced than he expected. And no, I'm just kidding. He's just moving the goalposts.
President Trump says his is a different kind of presidency. And that's part of why he thinks the 100-day scorecard coming up Saturday is something that doesn't really apply to him. He calls it an artificial barrier and something that just isn't that meaningful.
Wow. An artificial barrier that shouldn't apply to him. He's probably used that same line to get out of wearing a condom. Now, Donald Trump can't suddenly say that 100 days is an arbitrary number because he ran on the 100 days during the campaign. You don't get to just disregard the number because you don't like the current results. Because if most voters in America got to choose the number they preferred, well, you wouldn't be in the White House, Donald. You'd be at Mar-a-Lago playing golf.
Trevor Noah.
Yeah, he skewers.
On The Daily Show. He does. And there are some political comedians who are better at it than others.
Right. He is brilliant, really.
He really is brilliant.
Oh, my goodness.
Because I think his disquisitions on race and his stand-up things that I've seen on Netflix are absolutely brilliant and spot on. Just intellectually, historically, psychologically, philosophically.
Right.
I mean, he dissects the notion of race in such a way, because he's literally a man of the world.
Yes.
I mean, he's South African who's working, who's got an international career, and so he really is something. But not everybody's successful at it. I mean, when you get into politics, it can backfire on you pretty quick.
No question. But I want to just tell you a little bit about why and how I got involved in writing about this issue.
Yeah, how did you decide to write about a bunch of comedians?
Well, I started because in each of the books that I've worked on with colleagues, we focused on African Americans in media, various sorts. And the first one, of course, was Split Image, African Americans in the Mass Media. And I got into that because students, when I was teaching at Morgan and then at Howard University, students would say, I'm teaching history of broadcasting and film, and they'd say, well, how do we position ourselves in these industries that white people have built? And then they would say, because, black people didn't have anything to do with building these industries. And I was like, well, where did you get that information? And they said, well, there's nothing about them in any of these books. And they were right. And so I started on a mission. Every course I taught, I had a thread about African-American participation in those industries. So in history of broadcasting and film, for example, I was teaching about the music and recording industry. And so I would talk about Bessie Smith. And Bessie Smith saved Columbia Records from bankruptcy. They were only marketing her songs to the black audiences. And they were getting ready to go out of business because the other audiences were not really flocking to listen to their songs. And they said, well, let's try her in the larger market, not just in the black market. And of course, she saved them from bankruptcy. They've flourished ever since, as you all know. And the same sort of thing happened with Nat King Cole. So there are all kinds of stories like that where African Americans participated in building an industry, were not given the recognition and the respect, were not given the rewards or the financial remuneration for their efforts, and for saving and building a multinational corporation in many ways. So that story had to be told so that those kids would understand that. So every period we talked about, we had a thread that had to do with the African-American experience. And then I met with some colleagues who were doing similar things, and we said, okay, well, let's write and put together a compendium so students will have something they can use. And it'll be that we have all the good stuff of each of these periods. And, of course, I got the job of writing to those companies and saying, would you allow us to use a chapter from your book so we can put this companion together for the students? And, of course, most of them said, no, tell our students to buy the book. And so, that's how we wound up saying, okay, we'll write our own book. And as it turned out, Bill Barlow and I were the ones who were left from that group who really wound up finishing putting together Split Image. And then, of course, we picked up the threads from Split Image to do the Obamas and the Mass Media. Again, we were talking about treatment of African Americans by the media and in the media. And in this case, it was the Obamas and how they were treated. So it was politics and mass media. And then, of course, now we're talking about humorists. So it's always about the African American experience with media in some sense.
Speaking of the Obamas, there's a famous, now famous clip from the Jimmy
yes.
Fallon show, The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon, when Michelle Obama was interviewed by Jimmy Fallon. Here's that clip.
This is you. This is after the Trump inauguration, just waving from Air Force One.
Yeah, it's like.
Can you just walk me through
it? Bye, Felicia.
He even gets a trap hit, you know, from the band. So, bye, Felicia.
Bye, Felicia.
I mean, that's something that not everybody might know of. I mean, is that something you think everybody's going to think? I mean, I happen to know about it because I asked about it.
Yes.
I didn't know at the time exactly what it meant. Comes from a movie, right?
Actually, it's used on social media all the time now by the young people. I mean, that's how I saw it. You know, bye Felicia was something you always said when you were saying, get out of my face, to someone that you were feeling didn't belong in your space and was beneath your spending time with.
Yeah.
That's basically what they're saying.
See, and I'm an old white guy, so I was not hip to that in the least. But that's because the title of the book is Black Face to Black Twitter. So you take this through the social media explosion
right.
that we've all witnessed over the last several years.
Right.
So phrases like "Bye, Felicia," you know, are well known to, you know, millions of people, even if they haven't seen this movie. It was originally in a movie with Chris Tucker and Ice Cube.
Right.
A movie called,
that's right.
Friday.
That's right.
You know,
there's a series of Friday movies,
yeah.
and they use that in almost all of them. That one liner that, you know, everybody got it from the first one.
Yeah. So social media and black comedians and black comedy, they're very much intertwined, and there's been huge successes. I mean,
right.
Issa Rae is one of them.
Yeah.
I mean, she ended up with an HBO contract because of stuff she was doing on YouTube.
That's right. And one of the things is Vibe used to be the vehicle that was used by so many young African Americans who really felt that they were comedians. And one of the things we found when looking at social media today is that there are so many young people who think they are so funny themselves. They don't really need Trevor Noah or any of these other folks to help them out because they're so funny themselves. And so that's one of the things that happens. It's no longer that you put together a message and send it out and then people have to interpret your message. Today, they are interacting with the message, changing the message, and then sending it out again. And somebody else interacts with the message and change. It's a dynamic that's going on rather than, you know, a one-way communication. And so that's one of the things we have to help students understand and recognize, and then make sure they recognize that that's such a powerful tool. It shouldn't just be used for humor, and that's part of what we talk about in communications, that it should be used to communicate more serious things as well and recognize the power of that instrument. You know?
Yeah, and Black Twitter, which has a gazillion followers, and I'm happy to be one of them. There's always interesting stuff on there. But you write that it's noted for encouraging a clapback culture.
Right.
And so this is a way of, you know, getting in somebody's face, but doing it in a funny way,
right.
and in a way that, you know, really makes a serious point.
Exactly. And you know who's doing that right now, and that is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. I mean, she does the clapback so quickly, you know, and she is Hispanic, a non-African American. But, you know, all of the young people across all the different cultural, racial groups are doing similar sorts of things and interacting with each other in some ways that I think are exciting because they accept, respect, and interact with each other in some ways that I think the older generation has not done.
Jan Dates, the book is called From Blackface to Black Twitter. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Midday. Our phone number, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. And our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. And we're streaming as well on the WYPR Facebook page. Of course, social media can be a very vicious place as well.
Yeah.
You talk about Leslie Jones, an incredibly talented comedian who's one of the cast members of Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
She was part of the the remake of Ghostbusters about 3 years ago. And all of a sudden, all these memes were taken. And she was attacked on Twitter to the point where she closed her Twitter account.
Yeah, she dismantled it and stayed away from it for a couple of years. She's back using it again now. But, you know, it's hard to imagine why people would be so vicious and mean-spirited. But we have all kinds of people in the world, and I think one of the things that she learned and I think taught other people, and that is that you pick yourself up and dust yourself off and you move back in and start, you know, fighting again and working again and ignoring the stupidity that's around you.
Kamau Bell, who has a show on CNN called The United Shade of America, mm-hmm. I think also does a really great job
dissecting
the racial dynamic of American culture.
With humor.
Yeah, with lots of humor. Here's a clip from Kamau Bell, United Shade of America, which is number three, Luke.
But then there's that thing that happens with white people who are your friends, who are on the left, and that thing where you go, hey, I had a thing happen, it was racism. They go, how'd you know it was racism? See every black person, oh, people of color, oh no, yeah. How do you know it's racist? I guess I'm kind of an expert in this. I've been studying it my whole life, whether I wanted to or not, I kind of know. And let me just explain why people, this is what it sounds like when you say that to us, because I don't think you get how crazy that sounds. It would be like if I was to run into you on the street, collective white person, and I was like, hey, what do you do today? I was like, well, I got up, I ran some errands, and I had lunch. What'd you have for lunch? I had pizza. How'd you know it was pizza? You'd be like, what are you talking about? Because I knew it was pizza. It was clearly said pizza. I have pizza almost every day. That's what I think is suspicious. How are you having all this pizza every day? Because there's pizza everywhere in the world. No, I don't see all this pizza you're seeing. I don't think you had pizza. Are you sure it wasn't pita bread with cheese on it? Are you sure it wasn't pita bread with cheese on it? No, it was pizza. I've eaten a lot of pizza in my life. My parents ate a lot of pizza. My grandparents ate a lot of pizza. My great-grandparents, my great-great-great-grandparents were brought to this country to make pizza, but they weren't allowed to eat it, weirdly. I know it was good pizza. I don't know. Let me ask somebody else who's never had pizza. Come here. You've never had pizza. Do you think that? I don't think it was pizza. He's always talking about pizza. Now I have to kill you. That's what I'm saying. How do I know it was pizza? That's what it sounds like, white people.
Yeah. How do you know it's racism?
Right.
Kamau Bell, he's brilliant. And, you know, just this week, the last couple of days, Steve King, the congressman from Iowa, being essentially censured by the Congress for incredibly racist remarks that he made in the New York Times just a few days ago. There's an argument, for example, within the Standards Department of NBC News about whether or not one can call those comments racist or whether they have to be referred to as racially tinged or, you know, have racial overtones.
Right. Or if you are saying someone else has called it racist. However, they did change that. I heard it on the news this morning. That they have now said, oh, it's okay for you to, in fact, say racist. And so I heard some of the news casters saying, you know, racist remarks without having to say that it was from someone else's statement. But that shows you, you know, we're going through all kinds of machinations today, trying to get our arms around this whole issue of race and where do we come down as a society. And
it helps, doesn't it? That at least we can take a person like Steve King, whose history of racist remarks goes back decades.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if we're not calling him a racist,
yeah.
My Lord, who is?
Who is? That's right. Who is? And I think you're right. Part of it is having the conversation and making sure that, you know, you uncover what you see as really, this is crazy. Why are we doing this? Helping people to really wrestle with the issue in a more public way than we've ever done before, it seems to me. It's my hope and prayer that we use it as an opportunity to grow as a society. Because if it doesn't work in this country, I don't know what's going to happen to the rest of the world.
Let's go back to the phones to Tom in Mount Vernon. Tom, welcome to Midday with Dr. Jan Dates.
Oh, good afternoon. I have a question for Doctor. I was wondering, my favorite comedian of all time probably was Godfrey Cambridge.
Mm.
In the late 1970s, he starred in a movie called Watermelon Man.
Mm-hmm.
Watermelon Man, uh-huh.
About a conservative white guy who gradually turns into a black guy. I found him the most hilarious, but the most poignant movie I've ever seen. Does the doctor have a comment? Has he ever seen that movie?
You know, I haven't seen it, but I certainly know Godfrey Cambridge and his work. And so for some reason, that particular one is one that I haven't seen. But I will go and look at it because it sounds intriguing. I thought he had great talent, and it was very sad that he did not have a long fruitful life.
Yeah. Speaking of that era, let's listen to a clip of Flip Wilson,
yes,
who had a very famous character named Geraldine Jones.
Mm.
He was incredibly popular with audiences of all colors in his heyday in the 60s and 70s.
Mm-hmm.
She came in the house, she had the box, Rev saw it. Rev said, "What, another dress? So this is ridiculous. Three dresses in a week, another dress?" And she tells him, "I didn't want to buy this dress. The devil made me buy this dress." She said, "I was going down the street. I was minding my own business, singing to myself. I said, 'What you say, honey?' And the devil stopped following me, telling me how good I look." Rev said, "I'm not going for that." He said, "Because every time you do something wrong, you blame it on the devil." I said, "You blamed it on the devil when you ran the car into the side of the church." She tells him, "It was the devil. You wasn't there. How do you know?" Said, "He grabbed that steering wheel out of my hand." Rev said, "Well, why didn't you step on the brake?" She tells him, "Because when he grabbed the steering wheel, I tried to kick him. I can't kick him and step on the brake at the same time." Said, "We had a big fight. That's why I was in the back seat when y'all got the call."
"The devil made me do it." Yeah, one of his great lines with Geraldine. That's Flip Wilson. We just have a couple of minutes left, Dr. Dates, but the pressure that black performers in all areas, but in comedy perhaps more so than in theater or movies, that they are under to come up with good art that isn't stereotypical. Mm-hmm. I mean, you write about the Def Comedy Jam on HBO, which, right, you know, presented a certain kind of attitude, a certain kind of vibe, mm-hmm, of what being black meant, particularly what being a black male meant. Mm-hmm. And you had, you know, incredible graduates of that.
Oh, my God.
That, you know, Dave Chappelle was part of that. You know, Bernie Mac, Monique, Martin Lawrence, Chris, right, Tucker. I mean, it's a who's who.
Yes.
But, you know, when we see Flip Wilson, you know, back in the day, you know, making fun of black women, black church women, of, mm-hmm, all people. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a fine line, isn't it?
It is. And that's the brilliance, I think, of the black humorists, that they are able to walk that fine line and help people of all communities see the humor in it and accept the humor in it. At the same time, they recognize that it's a different from maybe my particular culture. It might be my culture for some other groups, you know?
Yeah.
But their brilliance is being able to thread that needle, again, the needle.
And looking ahead, it seems that social media will play an increasingly important role. And
absolutely,
this is the point you make at the end of your book, that it's not just TV and movies anymore.
Yeah.
It's just the field is so much bigger. Yeah, any particular talents that we should keep our eye on that we may not have heard of before?
Well, I think the talents we've talked about, you know, the Trevor Noahs, the Tiffany Haddishes, the Issa Raes, I mean, all of those people who are so talented and young and have a lot to offer, just watching them grow is, for me, just gratifying. And I'm just happy to be able to see them move forward.
Dr. Jeanette Dates, she is the former dean of the School of Communications at Howard University. She lives here in Baltimore. She began her career as a teacher in the Baltimore City Public Schools. Her new book, which she co-authored with Dr. Mia Moody Ramirez, is called From Blackface to Black Twitter: Reflections on Black Humor, Race, Politics, and Gender. It's always a pleasure to see you, Jan Dates. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Coming up, a review of the new show at the Theater Project here in Baltimore. Our theater critic, Jay Wynn Russick, joins me right after this quick break. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.